You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thank you for having me.
Space X. That's the story today.
Yeah, it's a difficult situation because the average person is not able to participate directly now, though indirectly, yes. And it seems a little bit of a contradiction, but there are funds out there. It's a really interesting story. You've got private funds that took positions, in a private placement for SpaceX shares, going back, in some cases, several years. I think Google bought in several years ago, of all things. But several private funds and some bigger companies took investment positions when they were just getting off the ground and trying to get the package together and, I guess, raise seed money and so forth. So some got in really cheap. I mean, I've heard numbers that $50 a share or something like that. Meanwhile, they say the private market for SpaceX is now, at least last I heard, around $650. And again, that's the private market. And you know, you and I, us mortals, we don't seem to have the ability to trade that private market. It's an institutional big boys game, okay? But there were some surrogates out there, you know. One of which is in our newsletter and has been in our newsletter. And it's called Destiny Tech. And the symbol is DXYZ. And they took an investment position among a lot of high-tech companies. You know, so this is just one of many. I think it's like 18% of their portfolio is SpaceX. So this thing has been all over the place in the last year, year and a half. It got down recently as low as 26. It was as high as 70. And in the last 10, 12 days, it's rallied from the mid-20s up to 70, back to 42, and today it got up to 61. So this is with a 18% interest in SpaceX as part of their overall portfolio. So there was a way indirectly for individual investors, and still is, if you want to trade this particular vehicle. There are a couple others out there, but this is an example that we've had in our newsletter and has done well. So it doesn't reflect $650 a share per se, but I guess indirectly it does, and they own a bunch of other private private companies. So this is just one way to have played it. And it's closed right near its high in trading today, but still off the $70 high it had, you know, about a 7-8 days back. But you know, the story is an S-1 filing with the SEC occurred, I believe, yesterday for the SpaceX, and it's big document, a lot of stuff to go through. Analysts that look at it and say, you know, the income to the company right now is not anywhere justify the price. You know, it's on the spec that we're going to make a lot of money on the moon and on Mars and on the creation of more rockets. Apparently the rocket division, the actual launches and the rockets haven't been all that profitable as people had thought. But you're buying Elon Musk. You know, that's essentially what this is all about. And it's supposed to be the largest public offering ever, $1.5 to $2 trillion, which is just an incredible number. Just even think about that on an IPO. And that's sort of the big story. And when it actually will start trading, and at what price will it trade? You know, if it's offered at 650, if it's trading in the private market at 650, do you think it would open at 650, or would it open at 1,000, or would it open at 450? I mean, nobody knows, but generally you would think it would open higher. And then how many investors can afford a $650 or $1,000 stock? Of course, I guess some do, because you've got some higher price, you know, names out there, you know, in the Mag 7 group, for example, that have traded to high prices. But, ultimately, they're going to have to probably reverse split the stock to get it down to a more affordable level for the average person at some point in the future. But it's exciting. I mean, this has been going on for several years. I'm surprised that, the story is that Elon Musk wants to get it public before we start any potential bear market, whether we're going to get into a bear market or not. I guess we're due for some type of bear market at some point in the future, since we've had such a roaring bull market so long. But the story was, let's get it out in public, and let's not take the risk that there's a, bear market out there and we can't get this thing sold and up and running. So that's part of the story. And, I'm a big bull on Elon Musk, as I've had for many, many years. Anyone who's been invested with him, there's been volatility, but he's generally been a big success. And the question is, can SpaceX make, Starlink satellites as part of SpaceX, which apparently makes some money, which is sort of good news, but the rocket portion of it and, the moon landing and the Mars landing and all that other cool stuff, is not happening tomorrow. So it's, you're betting on the future. Also, there's a big AI component tied to the SpaceX as well. And there's so many companies that are connected to this in the aerospace industry and in the materials industry, there's, a lot of cross benefit here, in terms of many other industries and companies benefiting, in the AI boom that we're now experiencing, a lot of it, the data center expansion, the energy, this expansion has been funded by, big U.S. companies, and it's creating, a real division among what the markets are really doing and how people are really benefiting. I mean, I got the feeling that, most people are not benefiting from the AI expansion. It's just investors are in some of the big stocks that are benefiting from it. So there's a big division about who's benefiting from it, but it is holding up the indexes, and a lot of big companies are spending money. Well, SpaceX is going to have a lot of money to spend, and that's going to help a lot of industries too. So, it should create jobs, and it should be a big positive overall. Well, it's going to filter down to the average, to Main Street, as we would hope, that, that we don't know. But that's sort of the real excitement here. And, for those who've been following me for a while, we've had this particular little stock, this DXYZ, on our list on and off for a year, knowing that it was an indirect play, even on a smaller basis, in the SpaceX offering. So it should be real interesting if it does go public here this summer, how it trades, how volatile it is, at what price does it become public, and then when does what's the timeline for executing all the plans for SpaceX? So this has been a long time in coming. I mean, I've heard investors getting involved in this probably 8-10 years ago. I mean, this is not just a new idea by any stretch. So should be real exciting.
Should a person sell their high-priced NVIDIA stocks so they can afford to buy some SpaceX?
Well, SpaceX might be pretty high too when it comes. If you have a brokerage connection and you can buy shares in the IPO before it actually trades, I would say probably yes. There's only going to be a select group of individuals that are going to be able to buy the IPO. You have to have a relationship with a brokerage firm. They have to allocate you X amount of shares. And the question is, how are those shares going to trade? Let's say you get them at $600 a share, and it opens at $700 or $800. That's great. Or does it open down and surprise people? But the way to get in, if you could, yes, I would say, I wouldn't say sell all your NVIDIA, but if you had, NVIDIA's already had a big run, and this is sort of a new game, so to speak, a new boy on the block here, that maybe it's worth a little, say, speculation, but no idea how this is going to trade. A lot depends on the stock market conditions at the time it starts to trade, but I suspect it's going to be a lot of buying interest on the part of the public who wants to follow Elon Musk and you know, if you follow Tesla stock, I mean, you really had swings in Tesla, you know, just in the last, a couple of years. Let me just put up a chart here really quick because I want to refresh my memory myself in terms of some of the volatility that you could potentially experience, you know, with a SpaceX. I mean, you had Tesla, you know, $400 a share back in 2021 early, and it got down to $101 a share, you know, within 2 years. I mean, it literally one-fourth the value, and then it goes from 101, you know, up to back up to 488 back in late 2024, and now it's sort of been hovering between the 400 and the $250 area, now back into the mid 400. So it's had some pretty big swings. Will SpaceX do the same thing? You know, will you have a surge up to 600, 800, then back to 400 or 300, and then up to 900? I mean, it's just the nature of the market, and it's just going to be a fun ride for those who are traders. And I know I'm just hearing a lot of skepticism on the part of analysts on the financial networks, and that sort of intrigues me a little bit. I mean, it could be sour grapes that they don't own any of it. You know, they're coming out with some comments like I made earlier. Well, maybe they're not as profitable now as they should be, or some of the pricing seems to exaggerate the value of the company based on the current earnings. And I just think it's sour grapes because they're not following Elon Musk's success. I mean, basically, he's always ahead of the curve, and things that he's envisioning or potential profit centers could be things that they don't even imagine right now. So this shook a lot of people out of Tesla for a long time, and they were wrong because it did come back. And I just think it's going to be real interesting how it plays. I would remain bullish on it. I mean, if we go into a severe bear market and a super, you know, a correction of sorts, I mean, all stocks react to that. I mean, there's a few that are impervious, but generally everything tends to come down. So we'll see how it all trades. I don't have a crystal ball, but I would say if you could buy some shares and you do have a connection to a brokerage firm to buy some pre-IPO shares, you know, then you could trade them. Sure, give it a shot. But meanwhile, something like this DXYZ that I mentioned earlier is sort of a surrogate, and that should trade, you know, up and down along the way too. So that might be, even though it doesn't fully represent SpaceX, it represents a lot of other companies in their portfolio, it seems to be tracking now based on the excitement over the SpaceX story.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're chatting with Mark Leibovit. Mark, the Fed will be changing heads with Kevin Warsh replacing Jerome Powell. Is that going to change the direction of the Fed?
I think so. You know, Powell was a political animal. He lowered interest rates just prior to the prior U.S. presidential election when there was real no basis for it. So obviously he was trying to help the Democrats, which, you know, the fact that he was sort of incompetent for many years prior to that for a lot of other reasons just added, you know, cherry to the top of the cake here, so to speak, in terms of his incompetence. In any event, the fact that he's still sitting apparently on the board for a while sort of irks a lot of people, including myself. But in any event, nothing personal against the guy. I just think he did a lousy job, and I don't like, you know, political components to the Fed. Now, I have a completely other opinions too, as you probably know, and it's been for many, many years that about the very existence of the Fed itself. I just think it's an arcane institution. It was created in 1913. It's done more damage than benefit. Even Ben Bernanke was quoted back in 2011 about, you know, that the Great Depression was a lot worse in the 1930s, possibly because the Fed had raised interest rates at that time, which was the stupidest thing they could have done. So, you know, there's dozens of examples of mismanagement. Alan Greenspan did do such a great job. He was slamming on the brake and then slamming on the accelerator back and forth, and nobody knew which way the Fed was going. But, you know, hopefully, you know, given the fact that it's not going to be abolished, which it should be, and may at some point it will be, but, you know, hopefully he's supposed to be taking the reins and, you know, trying to get things more organized over there. And the consensus view is that with the inflation numbers the way they are, there's no way he could lower rates. The big thing about interest rates, and there's a lot of discrepancy or ill information about this whole scenario. I mean, the fact is that when Fed raises rates, that's actually more inflationary because it adds costs of business to business, and to the cost of running business, and the cost of business just goes up. You have to borrow, your costs are higher, you have to pass it on to your consumers, and it's just an inflationary action to raise rates. It's not deflationary. And in fact, if he lowered rates, it'd probably be the smartest thing to have done and fly in the face of all this so-called economic theory, which basically is a bunch of nonsense. We already know the economists are the worst possible analysts in terms of projecting future economic conditions or the stock market. So it should be real interesting, you know, how various markets react depending on what he does or he doesn't do. But the Federal Reserve needs an enema. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, it's done all kinds of crazy things. There's a lot of secret activity going on about how it invests. It's invested in some private company stocks or bonds, which is not much talked about. The movement of the M2 money supply is really very important, because how much money is floating out there could be as important as where interest rates are trading. And, you know, just the conduct of the whole institution, there's a lot of things that need to be changed, and if not completely revamped. So, this is, everybody's going to be watching him. The conventional view is the statistics say that he can't do anything, but he might surprise people. And I think the big surprise could be perhaps even lowering rates, just when nobody ever thinks it's possible or appropriate. So, I'm hoping for some change there, and we'll just have to see how it all, you know, plays out. But I think, you know, the bottom line is the fact we got rid of Powell is probably, you know, the best thing that could have happened of the list of things, that alternatives that we had. You know, I would have preferred to see, you know, someone else in that slot, someone that was perhaps a little bit more bias to the gold market, for example. So there's been some other potential candidates for that slot, and you know, a couple of which tried to be nominated in the past and weren't successful in getting to that point. That the thought being, you know, if we can tie perhaps the debt to the gold market, perhaps we could create some more stability in the economy and in the finances. But we'll just see how it all, you know, it all plays out. I don't have a crystal ball here, but I know that the market's hoping for some, you know, more intelligent management here than what we've had up to this point. But, you know, things that will be reacting will be, you know, based on what he does, will be, you know, treasury yields. How are they going to react to whatever he does? How will gold and silver react to his actions? What will the U.S. dollar do based on whatever he does or he doesn't do? Will the bank stocks do worse or better based on his actions? And of course, we know the crypto market is very sensitive to any policy shift as well. So these are all the markets that are going to be holding their breath, so to speak, here in terms of what he does and what he doesn't do. But I'm just hoping that he comes in and he's like a bull in the china shop, and he really, you know, breaks some dishes.
A lot of analysts say he may not have any choice but to raise rates to help quell inflation driven by higher fuel prices, tariffs, and higher health care costs.
And I dispute that, because history says higher interest rates actually increase the inflationary pressures. So history doesn't support that, even though that's the conventional viewpoint. So the question is, how much money supply is being floated out there? The M2 money supply has been overall increasing in the last, I don't have the current data, but but the last several months it has been increasing. If you keep the money supply increasing, that could possibly be the reason, you know, along with AI investment on the part of big companies, but part of the reason the S&P is into new record highs, because you got more money floating around, and part of that is the Fed at work in keeping the money supply high. I'm referring to the M2 supply. So the short-term rates, you know, are just the focus of so much discussion, and I think there's other factors out there in terms of how the Fed, you know, does a lot of back-end activity that could be important. But my view is lower rates. I don't think raising rates does anything but hurt the markets. They think it's going to help the market. I think it's going to increase the inflation if he does it. And my gut feeling is he won't. He won't raise the rates. So keep them the same or go lower and perhaps surprise all the bears.
Could we see political unrest with so many young people unable to find entry-level jobs because those jobs are now being done by AI?
I disagree with that. You know, a lot of them are out there complaining, but, you know, you need to get trained in whatever fields open up relative to the AI boom. You know, if they don't have the proper training or they have to retrain, then they may have to do it. I'm of the view that the AI should open up more opportunities, not decrease them. I know there have been some layoffs. I know Amazon laid off some people, and there are reasons for concern, but we've seen, you know, a lot of layoffs of companies in the past and people just getting, you know, retrained or redirected. And, you know, maybe they have to go into the vocational world. You know, maybe they have to become electricians or plumbers, you know, or, you know, roofers or, you know, there's a lot of down-to-earth construction that's needed. I mean, the energy plants that are being created, you know, all these require, you know, was that show on television, you know, about dirty jobs, you know? I mean, there's bottom line, a lot of jobs out there that are related to the expansion of the economy and the building of the data centers and the expansion of our energy system and stuff. So, you know, electrical people, plumbing people, all kinds of contracting people, construction people, I think are benefiting from this. And I think maybe just getting yourself retrained. And if you insist of only working behind a computer, then, you know, then there's other things you might do. You know, I have a son who just graduated med school. I mean, he decided he wanted to become a doctor. I mean, there's other things, you know, you can try to work towards besides sitting behind the computer and only doing, you know, programming. But I think programming still should be a possibility. You know, Jensen Huang was being interviewed. He's the head of NVIDIA, as you know, and he was just interviewed on CNBC yesterday, and he was asked that question about the loss of jobs, and he was very bullish, saying, no, it should open up a lot more opportunities. So we just have to figure out where that opportunity is and get trained and maybe get the training into the vocational or college programs that's needed to accommodate this. I had another friend who a few years ago decided, a young friend who wanted to go into the nuclear engineering, and this was at a time when you mentioned nuclear or anything like that, people would just shy away from you. There's no way we're going to build nuclear plants. Nuclear is dead. That's the end of nuclear. Meanwhile, you know, he got a nuclear degree, and now this is like the hottest thing on the planet, you know, with the reopening of nuclear plants and the building of the smaller nuclear generators and all kinds of cool stuff going on. So, you know, nuclear engineering and all that area turned out to be a wise choice for him, and at the time it didn't seem like it was. We've had a lot of layoffs and changes in our economy over the years. I myself questioned my own career. I mean, for years, you know, the market was up and down. I say, gee, what if the market crashes? What am I going to do? Go work for the post office? I mean, what am I going to do? And it turns out there's always opportunity in the markets. You find, there was an expression, there's a bull market somewhere, and you find out where that is, and you play that investment, or you direct clients into that area. And for me, over the years, it's worked out. When things looked like they were going to hell, we suddenly saw cannabis stocks take off a few years ago, and you know, now we saw metals take off, and we see the AI boom, and we see all that nuclear stuff happening, and quantum computing stocks and all that exploding. I mean, there's always something happening, and I just you have to be optimistic, because over the decades, there are a lot of reasons to be bearish and figure that we're going to hell in a handbasket, and it didn't happen at all. It just turned out to be the opposite. And of course, at some point, we're going to get a market correction. We have a political consideration here in the U.S. with the midterm elections. What's the result of that, and how that will affect the markets or investment? These are, of course, questions. But, you know, for any volatility, there becomes opportunity. So I would leave you with that.
Mm-hmm. What's going on with copper right now?
Well, copper is in, you know, huge demand. This is like saying what's going on with silver. I mean, huge demands for silver and industrial metals, and the price may not reflect that, you know, day to day in terms of, you know, day to day trading, but in terms of production needs and industrial needs, copper's done terrific. It had a nice little spike just about, about 5 days ago. It sold off. Now it's starting to rally back a little bit. Still a very bullish chart. Big demand. I mean, copper hit an all-time high. I think it was $6 a pound, something to that effect. It was an all-time record here within the last week or so. So copper, silver, all these are needed for the expansion of the industrial complex, the rebuilding of the energy in North America. I mean, it's all part and parcel to the huge investments that are being made. So I don't see that slowing down so fast. I mean, you could say it got ahead of itself, and, you know, maybe it did a little bit. But wherever I'm reading, there's shortage of materials, and copper will be a beneficiary of that, as will silver, palladium, platinum, lithium, all of them. Everywhere I read, material science, materials companies are expanding. Money is being invested, looking for new resources to accommodate the needed demand. So nothing on the charts that say it's over yet. I mean, like anything else, we can have a bubble for a while. We saw that with silver and gold back in January, February, and it pulls back. But I don't think it was the end of the move by any stretch. I just think it's a consolidation before another leg takes us higher. And whether that's in 3 days or 6 months, that I can't say. But I'm sticking with the bull case for the key metals, including copper.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thanks for having me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovitt, editor and publisher of the Leibovitt VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.